The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition, where we dive a little bit deeper into an individual topic, or at least a more narrow topic than we usually handle on our Q&A show. On today's show, Jim and I wanted to chat a little bit and address some constructive criticism that we received from a longtime listener talking about some of our approach to retirement planning and some of the things that we talk about frequently as part of that process. And it's just a great topic, I think, to talk about in the context of his question or criticism. He has feedback, I guess you will say, on a couple of things that we mention frequently, the mental acuity issue as people age, as well as our approach to the go-go, slow-go, no-go phases of retirement that have become kind of key to our base approach to spending or describing your trajectory of spending over your retirement years. So welcome again. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier. And he has the actual email that's received, and he's going to give us a little tidbit. So I think those are the two main topics that he brought up in the email there.
But
we can probably tackle them one at a time.
Yeah, I thought this would be an interesting podcast to talk about, because we can address his very... I wrote to this gentleman as soon as I received his email, and I said, you know, you bring up some good points. Let's chat about this. This is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And I encourage him, if he ever wanted to call on our live show, which plays, don't tell me, every Tuesday? Okay, I got it. I thought for some reason I thought it was Monday. Every Tuesday at 1 o'clock Mountain Time or thereabouts. Give us a wiggle room around that 1 o'clock by about 5-10 minutes earlier or later. But the live show is another opportunity for someone to maybe call up and talk to us about some of this. But I did not take his email in a negative way. We don't expect everyone to believe in everything we talk about. Before I read his email, one thing I want, and I say to you guys being the listeners all the time, Chris and I do this for a living. Chris teaches financial planning, for Pete's sakes. We know what we're talking about when we say there is no universally accepted approach to retirement planning. Mm-hmm. There is none. When you study the CFP curriculum.
Well, yeah, kind of.
Did I nail it?
No, but people know what you're talking about.
Why do I have a hard time with that word? I'm doing something
extra
R's.
Wrong. You're throwing
an extra
in R? Extra R. Some of those R's you leave off, you're piling up into that word.
Courses.
Sure. Yeah.
Better one?
Yeah.
I know when you take the retirement planning courses, there is no uniform book under the CFP program that says, okay, here's how you do retirement planning, is there?
No, they talk about different approaches and some of the more common approaches that have kind of evolved within the retirement planning or just more broadly financial planning space. There are some typical methods that have been started years ago that have gained a lot of popularity. You know, the approaches with the wage replacement ratio and goal funding and different types of approaches like that. Cash flow based planning, which is what we do for the most part, because we feel that that's the most specialized or personalized approach to an individual, instead of talking about averages for everything and average this and normally this and talking in those kinds of terms. It's more for you specifically. This is your situation and your picture. So those approaches. So we talk about the cash flow approach, the detailed cash flow approach, which is a version of what you and I do here professionally. But there isn't one way where they just say, this is the way to do it. There's plenty of room for people to come up with their own way or modifications or blended hybrid methods. It's all over the board. So I think for people looking for advice on this, I recommend that you try to find an advisor or a planner that looks at the world and approaches retirement planning in a way that makes sense to you, that they can explain to you so that you understand it, and that resonates with you and makes sense. You just kind of get it. If you're working with someone who describes something, you're like, oh, wow, that's a lot of fancy words, and it sounds super complicated, so it must be awesome, but I really have no understanding of what you're talking about here. Can you just tell me if I can retire? I'm not a fan of that relationship at all. Right. I don't think that's beneficial for anybody. I think if you can't explain it to your 10-year-old, for the most part, you know, the key elements of a plan, it's probably too complicated, or you don't understand it well enough. And you should. You should understand what you're trying to do, what they're recommending that you do, and why you're doing these things.
Exactly. So I have said on the show in the past, and I will say it again, when you are evaluating whether you are hiring a planner, going to a website and going to use their embedded software, or buying your own software, or however you intend to project your retirement. Or maybe you're going to write your own spreadsheet. We've had several people do mm-hmm. that and ask us to proof their spreadsheets, mm-hmm. or at least give us our opinion of what they've done. However you are going to project your retirement, answer two questions. First, how is my retirement going to be projected? And the second question, why? Especially if you're interviewing an advisor. If you're going to hire someone to help you do this, ask that person, how are you going to project my retirement and determine if I can retire and what I should do and why? And to me, the most important part of that question is the latter. Why? If that advisor can't articulate why they are doing that, I'd be very careful. We have a why, and it's part of our why that this gentleman really disagrees with. He may not mm-hmm. realize that, but it's part of our why. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm presenting it that way, and I'm going to read his email.
And which is totally okay. If you don't buy into the why, that doesn't mean that you're right or you're wrong and the other person is right or wrong. It's just a different approach, a different philosophy of looking at things. But you should have the reason behind doing something is important. And if that's really where the resonate piece that I mentioned before comes in. When they explain the why, it should resonate with you and
exactly.
make sense. And you say, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I totally get why you do that. That sounds like a very reasonable, robust approach to doing this.
When people have a coffee and a second opinion phone call with me, I always say, if our approach, and I say our approach meaning Chris and I's approach, doesn't resonate with you, don't hire us. You're going to be sorely disappointed. This mm-hmm. is our approach. Before I read mm-hmm. that, little housekeeping, mm-hmm. I can't hear myself very well. Can you do whatever you have to do over there so I can hear me?
Certainly. Can you hear yourself at all?
Yeah, but I hear me through the room, not through my headphones.
Oh, not at all through your headphones?
I hear it a little. I hear you a hell of a lot better.
Okay, you keep talking and I'll fix it.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we received this email. I actually received this email, Chris, on my birthday. So no happy birthday wish was in there, but the subject line caught my eye, constructive criticism. That made me go, uh-huh, okay. And I wanted to see what this gentleman had to say. We're going to call him George. We're going to protect his privacy like we do with everyone. And as I said, I emailed him right away and thanked him for the email and said that we would talk about his concerns on a future podcast. And that's what Chris and I want to do today. I could hear myself much better now. Yeah. I don't know what you did, but
problem solved.
Excellent. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it begins. Jim, hopefully you can consider this to be constructive criticism. I listen to a lot of financial podcasts, and yours is my favorite. You and Chris are great together, and I look forward to your podcasts each week. I even like the idea of an 8 to 12 hour podcast marathon.
What?
That was your idea. Don't look at me.
Oh, and then just be done with it for a while?
Remember, yeah, all the because of all the questions that we have built up, we've got...
Oh, to catch up.
Yes,
oh,
and that's you right. said, why don't we just do a marathon?
That was a joke at the time.
Well, he apparently likes the idea of it. I would do it. You know I could do
it. Oh, I know.
Laura came in to me today, and she said, I don't think I could do your job. Laura is one of our admin folks. And I looked at her, and I said...
She doesn't need to.
Well, that's what I said, do our job. She says, you talk so much. She said, but that's all I do. She says, you go from one meeting to another to another to another.
Well, you have a lot of words in there. They got to get out.
Yeah. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Talking is not my problem. Shutting up is my problem.
No, I like it. I talk a lot more, obviously, when I teach class. I'm doing a lot of talking. So it's actually kind of nice to let someone else do the vast majority of the words.
For those who don't know, if you ever work with our firm, you won't even hear from Greg. Greg is a financial planner in North Carolina. We're trying to get him on the podcast, but he's a little nervous to come on. But he's excellent. You will talk with Chris if you do planning. Mm-hmm. You will talk to me during the initial phone call. Mm-hmm. You won't hear from me during the planning phase. And I pretty much are the one who deliver the actual plans. We all have our own places in here. If you do taxes, you'll talk to Joe. If you do some investments, you'll pretty much talk to me. But I am talking to Scott and Travis. Mm-hmm. So we all have our little specialties here in the office. But... anyways, the point of all this, I could do an 8 to 12 hour marathon because I talk 8 to 10 hours a day. Yeah. So doing a marathon is no problem. Chris would freak out over it. So I just wanted to let the listener know. So anyways, he began with that very nice intro, and he's a very friendly man. He wasn't ripping us a new one. Mm-hmm. He just disagrees with two elements, and he wanted to make that clear. So he begins. One of the problems I have, though, is with the story of your father and how he has lost his understanding of fractions. You tie this story in to a study that says mathematical aptitude starts to decline beginning at around age 53. You also suggest, or seem to suggest, that nobody will be able to handle financial numbers after age 70 or 80. Now, I'm going to stop there for a minute. I don't suggest that. If I do, he misunderstood what I was saying.
Let me probably interpret that a little, at least your intent. We talk about it a lot because it's something not enough people think about when they're putting together their retirement plan. They're looking at it through the eyes of a 50 or 60-year-old.
And not from the future eyes.
So we're really making sure people consider that aspect when they're designing things for the future that into consideration.
Before we go down this, because we're kind of addressing it, let me finish this part, because he breaks his constructive criticism into two paragraphs. Okay. Let me finish this paragraph, and then we'll address this one first before we get into a second
Sounds
one.
Good.
So he continues along let me tie it in. Mm-hmm. You tie this story, this is my dad's story, into a study that says mathematical aptitude starts to decline at age 53. You also suggest or seem to suggest that nobody will be able to handle financial numbers at the age of 70 or 80. You say it as though it is inevitable for everyone. It may be for some, but it's not for everyone. You don't think that Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett know what's going on with their business and finances? There are plenty of gray-haired CFOs and CEOs that can still handle complex business mathematics, not to mention simple fractions. I understand they may not be in their mental prime, but many people will not lose their ability to understand mathematics. So let me stop there because the next paragraph goes into another thing. And let's address this.
Well, let me say, before you go on, let me say one particular thing that I want to make sure. The examples he listed were people that were highly skilled with numerical analysis. So they're starting at a very, very high level. So even if they drop off, they're still way above most people, even at their prime. So make sure that we're not just comparing to those people that are starting at this ultra stratospheric understanding and then having it decline from there. Most people have a passable or decent understanding of financial situations and financial strategies, transactions, things like that to begin with. So when they decline a little, it's very, very significant in their understanding. So let's first say, I admit that not everyone is going to decline at the same rate. And you've said that before as well. We harp on it enough trying to send out the message, make sure you consider this, make sure you keep this in mind. When you're formulating something, don't overburden the 80-year-old with something really complex. There are 80-year-olds that could totally handle a very complicated situation. And maybe it's because they didn't have the drop-off, or they started at such a high level of understanding, the drop-off is barely noticeable because they can easily handle the situation they're dealt at 80 because they ran a multi-billion dollar corporation at the highest level or something like that. So
exactly.
The examples he gave, that's pretty explainable why they still could understand financial
concepts.
Not
everybody is Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett.
Right.
What we do, remember what I said, listeners in general and listener, this particular person who I know is listening to this podcast, we have always said when we, like I did at the beginning of this podcast, your advisor or your approach to retirement better be able to answer why, not just this is how I'm going to crunch the numbers, this is why. Well, one of the whys for Chris and I is the fact that we have accepted and understand and believe that people's understanding of mathematics and numbers in general, financial concepts, shall we call it, does decline. I believe in that. I'll give you an example, listeners. Yesterday, my phone kept ringing. You know, I got four more calls. Just in the time it took me to drive home, I finally put my phone on Do Not Disturb. I just was fed up with it. Somehow my number got into this hell of a junk call from someone pretending to be from the Social Security Administration. I played the recording to Chris. I got 9 of these calls yesterday. And if you listen to it, it was a computer saying, my Social Security number has been locked down because it's been compromised and I needed to call them and they gave me a number to call so it could be reactivated. We knew it was a scam. Of course it's a scam. But why do you think there is a computer out there sending out millions of these? Because there's a hell of a lot of people in their 80s and 90s who would have fallen victim to that. One of our clients, and do not mention any names here, we warned our clients in an email and in a newsletter that one of our clients fell victim to this fraud and had contacted us afterwards and realized, I think I might have made a mistake. And we had to help her put fraud alerts on her credit report because she fell victim. She called the number and gave her her Social Security number, her date of birth, gave all her personal information to reactivate her number, and then thought later, I don't think that made any sense. And she got a hold of me and asked me, and it happened. And this is a very nice woman in her late 80s who I guarantee you would have never fallen victim to that. I'm 56. When I got that call, I laughed. Chris laughed. We shook our heads. But the fact of the matter, these frauds exist because not everyone is Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett. And what we try to get our listeners and our clients to understand, part of our why we believe your minimum dignity floor needs to be covered with lifetime guaranteed secure income, is your minimum dignity floor is the minimum lifestyle you want to live forever, whether you have money or not. So we feel the minimum dignity floor should be covered with income that will continue whether you have money or not. That's the prime reason. But we always say there's another reason. Even if you don't run out of money, your ability to manage it and understand it will decline. And this man admits, even he says, that maybe they are not at their same, as he put it, I understand they may not be in their mental prime, but he's saying they're still pretty damn good at it. And yeah, Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett are. And as Chris said, even at their level of decline, they're still leap years ahead of most average people. But we tell people our approach is not just because we want your minimum dignity floor covered with income, whether you have money or not. In other words, you run out of money. That's a big fear people have. But even if you don't run out of money, you may not be able to manage it at the level you are. And to back that up, I give real life examples of my dad because I don't mind talking about him. And he has told me to. He has encouraged me to talk to my listeners about him. I don't like to talk about every single client we run into, but I can give you dozens of cases. But to back it up, we instead go to academic studies that back it up. And I reference a Harvard study that came out about 11 or 12 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And in the study is the age 53 that he references. Harvard wanted to know why people were falling victims to this stupid phone call I kept getting yesterday. The reason that phone call exists is the scam is, no, it works. Doesn't work with everyone, but it gets in front of the people who have gotten to the point where they fall victim to that. So out go these computer-generated phone calls. Harvard wanted to know, Chris, why this client that I talked about who fell victim to this and why the probably thousands of people who unfortunately fall victim to it fall victim to it. So they did their study. Read the study if you want to get it. It's 83 pages, I believe, or 73, one of the two, of painful academic doublespeak. I don't know. I know you work in academia. I don't. My God, you think I take a long time to talk? It took them about five paragraphs just to say what the hell they were going to do. I mean, it's just, oh, my God. And then what's all these? They always put people's names in parentheses as they're...
Well, they're referencing other research that's been done, other papers. They're taking information. So they don't start with everything from scratch. If other people have done particular elements of research that support their argument,
they're saying who they
include it and say, we took this from them and we're building upon that.
And I'm supposed to know who these people are?
If you're an academic in that area, you probably do.
Okay.
Yeah, or you can look it up.
Well, they kept referencing right. everyone else's names. Yeah. I'm like, well, who the hell are these people? But anyways, what Harvard did is they tested people from very young to very old. I believe the oldest was in their 90s. And they answered a series of rather simple, straightforward financial questions. And they're the ones who found that the part of our brain that understands financial concepts was not fully developed in the young and begins to degrade, and they could actually map or plot the degradation depending on the ages of the people who are answering the questions. And they're the ones who graphed it. And I have always said, listener who sent me this email and listeners, I've always said, now maybe not every time, Chris, but I said Harvard's graph was a bell curve. What does that mean? You're a grader.
Well, it's what we call a normal distribution, where it looks like, and they call it the bell curve because it looks like an old-fashioned, like the Liberty Bell, right? It's a certain shape that shows the probability distribution. Essentially, it's what we call a histogram of the number of people that in the study that have a decline of their financial knowledge or financial abilities. And what that bell curve shows us is that the vast majority are somewhere around the middle of the mean of the population that they're analyzing or the sample that they're analyzing. And you have two ends, and at the far ends, the curve is very close to the axis, right? That just means that there's not many folks out at the ends, either the very positive end and or the very negative end. But they're there. They exist. It's not like everyone is right in the middle. This is an argument of why we don't use averages and nominal value or normal values for people when we're crunching their retirement plan.
Well, life
specific for them. Exactly. So there's difference. There is the median. There's a whole bunch of people around that and close to that, but there's uniqueness. There's differences out there. And this is what he's referring to. He's focusing on those that are not in the middle of the normal curve. They are not at the median. And he's actually describing people that are on the positive side, that are
way out on that bell curve,
that are more, that are more talented than average and have a very high level of financial acuity or knowledge, and they exist, absolutely. But not everyone's out there. Otherwise, the hump in the curve would be out there at the super knowledgeable end of the spectrum.
So I recognize and accept, listener, George, we'll call him George. In your email, you are correct. Not everyone is going at 70 or 80 not be able to understand. And I've always thought I've gone to good lengths to say, and I usually word it, Chris, and maybe there are times where I haven't, but I try to word it, that as you age, your ability to understand financial concepts will decline. And then I also say, but your interest in it will also decline. And I often say, maybe your ability to understand it continues, but you just don't want to do it anymore. We have had that happen. And I give the example of, I know I've given this example because these people are clients. This actually happened. This, and I can point to many of these. I've been doing this for 21 years. But one of them that I talk about was a client 2 years ago now, Chris, who, as I was reviewing their investments, and I've talked about this before, this client still has a strong understanding of investments. But during my review of their portfolio, it was a woman, she interrupted me and she said, Jim, don't take this the wrong way, but what the hell am I doing here? That was her exact quote. And I looked at her, and you know what I said? I know you know what I said. I looked at her and I said, I don't know, you tell me. She said, I can take all of that money and just put it in the bank and I'm fine. Why am I dealing with this? And she went on to say to me, I don't want them. I don't want to be here. It was a nice day. I do remember that. I'd like to be out and enjoy my retirement. And she wasn't angry. It was just dawned on her finally. Now, this woman, when she first hired me years and years and years ago, oh, she was a tough cookie. She would question all the investment decisions, want to see all the numbers, really was into it. She just wasn't into it anymore. She still understood it. She didn't care about it anymore. Her point was, can't we do something a hell of a lot simpler with this? She's blessed. She had pension income and assets. She didn't have to worry about it. Can't we just kind of autopilot this so I can be out enjoying my retirement? And that's what we did for her. We changed her investments around quite a bit. I don't want to get into what we did. And I see her maybe once a year now. What we try to get our clients to understand, George, is that can happen. And yeah, there can always be the Warren Buffetts, but I bet you Warren isn't going to the office as often as he used to. and he may not quite understand things like he did when he was in his 40s and 50s. I don't know. I don't know the guy personally. But Chris makes an excellent point. Warren Buffett starts at levels that most people are never going to be at. We're not all Warren Buffetts. But for a lot of people, George, and listeners in general, I always say, don't look at your retirement through the eyes of a 50 or 60-year-old who is into this and understands it. Because at some point, and I always word it this way, you may not be into it or may not understand it. It's just that Chris and I want to back up why we say that, hence the Harvard study. That's the seminal? Did I get that?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. That's the seminal study in our industry. They're the ones who said the human brain is at peak understanding of financial concepts at 53. They didn't say, and I always, when I talk about this in private meetings with clients, say to them, it's not a cliff. You're not as dumb as a brick after 53. I hope not, because I'm 56. But I'm also not naive, George, into thinking that when I'm 76, I'm going to be as sharp as I am now. That's why I have a succession plan in place. Chris knows about it. We call it the monetization of our practice. That begins in 10 years when I'm 65. God, I'm going to be 66 in 10 years. Begins in 9 years. Oh, I don't like hitting 56.
Just dawned on you right now.
Yes. Like, just, I just got this email a few weeks ago. You know, I just turned 56 a few weeks ago. Yeah. Oh, man, that sucks. Mm. But anyways, I know I am not going to be as sharp. And we know we have to look at successes to us. We talk about this all the time. The business isn't going anywhere. The business is going to continue. Mm. Chris and I recognize we are not going to be at our peaks. And I also recognize I'm not going to want to do this someday. I mean, we're retirement planners. Mm-hmm. It would be naive of us to think we're not going to retire.
Be ironic if we never retired, right?
Retirement planners who can't retire. But anyways, I don't dispute your criticism, but I don't subscribe to it. Maybe you and some others will always have a strong understanding of their finances. But at some point in time, you may not, like my dad doesn't. And my dad doesn't understand fractions, let alone his investments. And you may be a Warren Buffett, where you always remember some. But maybe you get to that client I just described and you realize, what the hell am I doing here?
And there's, we look at it kind of as kind of risk management, if you will. I don't think you and I have talked about it in this context, but think of it this way. If you set out a plan for yourself that's overly complicated and you do decline, you've got a problem.
Or a plan that's just based on you always doing it.
Right. You've got a problem. Maybe it works out, but if it doesn't, you've got a problem. If you make it easy to follow, structurally sound, if you decline, you're fine. If you're smart enough, if you retain your abilities, what's the harm? There's got to be other things you can do to mentally challenge yourself other than manage your complicated finances. And if you want to, do that on the side as a hobby, but don't make it the core of your plan because you're putting yourself in a position where you could run into trouble later on. And that's what we're trying to avoid. We're not saying everyone must have and will only be able to handle a simple approach. What we're saying is the most reasonable approach is to create something that anyone can handle, regardless of what happens to them. If you end up on the high end of the scale, right, and you maintain your Warren Buffett smarts, that's totally fine. It's not going to hurt you that you had. I think maybe people fall into this trap too that we've mentioned before. just because something's more complicated and is harder and more difficult to implement doesn't make it better. It might be better, but they're better. I mean, you should clearly be able to see the better in that. There's not a justification for a lot of the complicated approaches that are out there because they aren't shown to be superior to a more straightforward, simple approach.
And I don't necessarily think he is disputing our approach to covering the minimum dignity floor with guaranteed lifetime secure income. And I've already explained why we believe in that. I don't think he's disputing that, but I agree with what you're saying. That's one of the reasons we have that approach is we want to keep it simple. And we want to keep it simple just in case you lose interest or lose ability. But even if you don't lose interest and don't lose ability, it's nice to keep things simple. That's our approach. Let's get to a second paragraph. I think we beat this horse, beat this dead horse. I got it. Beat this dead horse already enough.
Yeah, let's stop it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
To his next paragraph. Mm-hmm. More criticism of you. Well, he put that in here. By the way, Jim, this has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with Chris.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's right in there. I forgot. I skipped over that part.
Okay. I have a thick skin.
Furthermore, I don't care how Chris, precious people, he says, I also don't care how you, and I don't know if he means me or you or us in general, I also don't care for how you pressure people to spend more during their go-go years. And be careful. I know you want to go on this. Let me finish this paragraph. I also don't care for how you pressure people to spend more during their go-go years. I live in a 55-plus community, and I never hear people complaining that they wish they had done more and spent more in their younger years because now they have money but not the ability to spend it. Instead, everyone I know is complaining that they don't have any money to do the stuff they want to do. I understand that the goal is to have your minimum dignity floor covered, and then you can feel comfortable spending. But there is no guarantee when your go-go years will end. And I just want to stop there and say exactly, and that's one of the reasons I want you to spend it. But let me continue with him. But there is no guarantee of when the go-go years will end or when the slow-go years will begin or end. If I don't spend all my money before I pass away, I personally don't have a problem with it. It's going to go to my heirs. Maybe you don't understand that because you don't have children. And leaving it to Mosby doesn't mean as much. I don't know if he's getting a little personal there or not. Mosby died. Mosby was my dog, for those who don't know.
Yeah, but he was your child.
He was my best friend. I would rather have the income my investments generate for me for the rest of my life, and whatever is left goes to my heirs, rather than me spend everything. But what is reserved for my... Let me reread this because I think I might have read it wrong or he wrote it wrong or whatever. Where should I begin? I would rather have the income my investments generate for me for the rest of my life. Okay, that part I understand. Mm. And whatever is left afterwards goes to my heirs. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Rather than spend everything but what is reserved for my minimum dignity for. Okay, mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
So rather than spend it. This is just my opinion. And then he signs it with his name, and of course we call him George.
Well, the nice thing is he has every right to approach it like that.
Absolutely.
It's his life.
Exactly.
And while I think he's a bit misinterpreted our enthusiasm for the go-go phase of retirement, and that's intentional because we found too many people are not enthusiastic enough about the go-go years. And what we mean by that is there's lots and lots of people who have spent their working years making wise enough financial decisions that they do have financial resources going into retirement. There's some people who don't, so this doesn't apply to them, obviously, and they're not going to be listening to this podcast. But those of you who are have likely amassed some type of retirement savings, and now you're trying to figure out how to spend it. And a lot of the traditional guidance out there it's being found, and it's not just our opinion. Our opinion was formed before a lot of these academic studies now have been released, backing up what we've been saying for years, that having a fixed amount that you distribute from your assets over time unnecessarily restricts your spending in the early years in favor of having the same amount in your later years, when in fact you don't really need it necessarily for that, particularly, and people might say, oh yeah, no, we need it for medical, we need it for housing. Yeah, but in our plan, that's all taken care of. So really all we're talking about is the desired fun stuff spending. It unfairly restricts you under the traditional approach. So we've always been saying, let's look at it, make sure what you really want to make to ensure is covered is handled with secure income, your minimum dignity floor, and then maybe any inheritance that you want to guarantee or promise to your heirs, any additional what if, you know, maybe I need some aging assistance or long-term care or things like that, and make sure that that is handled in a way that makes you feel comfortable to finally figure out what's left to truly have fun. So we're not then saying you must now spend this and you must spend it by the time you get to 75 because you don't know if you're going to live a day past that. That's not the interpretation we hope you're taking away from this. It's more people didn't think they had the financial or emotional permission to spend it as aggressively as they may want to. They were unnecessarily constraining themselves in the early years when they were healthy enough to really do things, and then possibly ending up with these regrets that they had money, but they couldn't do it anymore because they were too old, too physically unable, whatever the reason might be. So it's really our approach is to find a way to reveal to someone that they might have the ability to spend more earlier. Whether they do or not is up to them. It's not, we're not trying to force one. And I had a, and we probably, we must come off a little bit like that, like he's describing, because I spoke to someone on the phone just in a couple weeks ago that had a similar, they wanted us to show them how much they could spend. Instead of saying, I'd like to spend this, can we do it? Instead, we go the reverse and say, okay, what could I spend? And I showed them a much larger number than they were expecting. And they said, there's no way we're going to spend that. And I said, well, that's not the point of me telling you this. This is just telling you that you, it looks like you could support spending up to this level. You don't have to go to that level. But now just think of how you will feel the permission that you've given yourself to spend at half that level maybe, which was still a substantial number for this particular couple, where before they really had no idea. They came into the process uncomfortable spending even at a reasonable amount. I showed them, it looked like they could do a lot more than that. And they left, they were heading off and said, well, now we're going to go, now we have an excuse this weekend when we're on vacation to look for a second house or a, you know, a rental or for the summer or something like that, that they never would have considered before because they thought they could not do it. So it isn't about forcing you and really, you know, cajoling you or really pressuring you to spend it. We're just trying to reveal the possibilities, the what if, the boy, looks like you could do this. Take that information and do with it what you will. And some people are like him. Like I'd rather leave the capital, we call it capital preservation approach in the academic world, what he's describing, at the end have the same amount as you started with, which is what's going to happen if he just spends the income coming off of his investments. At the end, there's going to be the same amount there. It's not going to grow or shrink. He's taken, well, there might be some growth anyway, but it's not going to grow as
or
much.
Or some shrinkage.
Or some, yeah, either one. But he's taken the income off right there, so it's certainly not going to be as much as if he left it all in there. But he's going to leave that, and that's totally fine. Totally fine. Doesn't hurt that we might have told him, well, you could do this if you wanted to. It's up to you whether you want to or not, but you have the, you can give yourself the financial permission to do it because of what we're showing you here. That's kind of the story, at least that I told the other people that I talked through here. So I think he's misinterpreting our enthusiasm for the go-go phase.
Right, but I also disagree with some of what he said. And I disagree because not everyone thinks the way he does. No, he's right. I don't have kids. And at this point in my life, I'm not going to have kids. Now, I date women who have children, but I don't personally have children. I do have dogs. Mosby was one of them, but he has unfortunately passed away. But for every person with children like him who want to constrain their lifestyle and their spending by just living off of income, which in today's low interest rates is not nearly that much, and leave an inheritance to their heirs, I can show you parents who say, kids get whatever the hell is left if anything is left.
Right.
I see that all the time, listener. All the time, George. I see it. And I have nothing against it. I think it's great. I don't expect my parents to leave me anything. If they do, that's nice. But it's money they didn't spend. I don't want them, though, to constrain their lifestyle so they could leave me something. I often see sometimes where couples disagree on this. Mm-hmm. One wants to do what he's doing. One wants to do what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Spend it. I see it. Mm-hmm. So that is more of an emotional decision. And we let our clients decide that. Mm-hmm. We don't tell them, you need to spend this during your go-go phase to hell with your kids. We listen to what they say. That's why we ask our clients, is a guaranteed inheritance important or not? We just did a podcast on this not too long ago. Because if it is important, we have to pull that guaranteed inheritance from their fund number. The money that they're going to spend during their go-go, slow-go, no-go years, that fund number. So if someone was to say to us, like you're writing, hey guys, I want my fund spending to be just what my income generates because I want to leave my capital to my children. We're not going to argue with them. That's their personal belief. Even though I don't have kids, I do know parents love their kids. And a lot of parents want to leave them something. But just as many parents say no. I've taken care of them my entire life. Or they're very successful. I've got to do this now. And if something is left, great, but it's not a top priority. Are they any more wrong than you and your approach? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think that is a personal decision. We just can't, in good conscience, as planners, tell someone to go ahead and spend this money down, only later find out, well, I really wanted to leave that to my kids. You never asked me that. You told me I could spend this much. So we always have to find out from our clients, do you want to leave a guaranteed inheritance? If so, what's the way we're going to fund that? Now, we sometimes disagree with your approach, especially in these low interest rate environments, trying to live off of just the income you generate. Because that can unnecessarily constrain your lifestyle.
Unless he's perfectly happy at that level.
Exactly.
And that's probably where he's at. And that's why he says, well, I'm fine like this.
Right.
Which is great.
And not everybody is like that.
Right.
Not everybody has enough in savings where the income they're generating from it can allow them to live a reasonable, fun lifestyle. And some people, they do have to make a decision. And when it comes to that, I can often show them there are other strategies. I don't want to get into them on today's call. But say, hey, rather than trying to leave this money and live off of the earnings, we just had someone recently we did a whole podcast on someone who was the opposite. He wanted to leave the money to kids, but he also was saying, it's constraining me too much. It's not enough. The income I'm generating. Well, also what I said is that there is a way you might be able to do both. And we examined that strategy. So we don't believe everyone should spend during their go-go phase. But I can show you or talk to you about cases where people died in their go-go years and never got to do what they wanted to do. Or a person who I was working with who developed dementia while they were still trying to go on some more of their go-go goals. One of them was a trip to New Zealand. And right in the middle, they developed dementia and never got to go. And sadly, they probably don't even remember that they wanted to go. I can show you clients who died in their 60s and 70s and left money to people who don't really need it. And they could have spent more, but we never could have got them to spend more. I tried to, but they didn't want to. They said, Jim, no, I don't know. And they passed away and left their money to people who probably appreciated it, but closed the accounts and spent it.
As long as they were happy and that was their choice, that's
exactly
great.
Exactly.
What we're trying to reveal is clarity so that you can make the right choice for yourself. It's not about revealing numbers to convince you to do something necessarily. It's revealing numbers so that you can make an informed decision.
Exactly.
That's really what it's all about. This is your life. You get to live it however you want. You can make the choices however you want. We're not here to make the choices for you. We're here to provide clarity and understanding to your situation, make some recommendations that you may or may not embrace.
Now, I don't know the age of this gentleman. He says he lives in an over 55 community. My dad lives in a community of 80 and 90-year-olds. It's not an over 55 per se community. It's all very old retirees. And they do have the regrets. I can say I've got just as many clients as you probably have friends in your community, George, who are in their 50s and 60s and realize, hell, I don't have enough money. And that's what he's saying he's running into. But I also have a lot of clients beyond my father who are in their 80s, mid to late 80s, who share with me, I wish I could do more. I wish I was younger. They look at me and say, I'm young. I'm 56. I feel old. I was out on a date not too long ago with a woman who was 46, and she started telling me that she was out on a date early with another man, but it's not going to work out, yada, yada, yada. I said, why is it going to work out? Oh, he's old. He's 55. I can't. And I was like, oh, God. I'm just sitting there like,
well,
what do I do?
You should think of that as glass half full because you clearly look younger than 55.
I do. But she wouldn't go out with a guy who's 55, well, and I'm sitting there at 56.
Well, you're clearly not potential for her, but at least you should. I mean, don't take it the glass half empty. It's glass half full.
And for some reason, she thought I was only 50. I don't know how she got that idea. I never told him.
By the end of the day, did you share the truth?
Oh, hell no. What, you think I'm stupid? I'd like to go out with her again. I had fun. But as soon as I tell her, she's going to freak us out. As long as she wants to think I'm 50, let her. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. What I'm getting at, listener, is it's not just my dad who shares with me that there are older people who can no longer spend their money and they're not happy because they realize they didn't spend enough when they could have. There are people out there, believe it or not, who fall into that category.
Right, but I will agree with him, there's people in that category
the other way
that are happy, that are fine. They're in their 80s, they can't do it, and they have money, and they have no regrets.
Or in their 50s and 60s, like he points out, who don't have enough money.
Yeah, so it's possible. Absolutely. But as long as you're happy, that's the key. As long as you're happy, you have money piled up that you didn't spend or not, as long as you're happy, don't have no regrets, but don't accidentally fall into the bucket of having money and regrets.
I know me personally. And again, yes, I don't have children, so I agree with you, listener, on that. But me personally, if I die with a lot of money left over, I'm going to think that's life unlived. Money left over, to me, is life unlived. My goal is not to die with the most. My goal is to die with the least. And when I say that, I'm talking my fun money. My least amount of fun money, Not the money I've reserved for my minimum dignity floor. Not the money that I've reserved for my aging assistants. Not the money I reserve for a guaranteed inheritance. Yes, listener, I do want to leave a guaranteed inheritance to a charity that shall remain nameless that I would like to leave some money to because I think they do good work. I want to die with that money because that money, Chris, is earmarked to something. But God damn it, my fund money? I don't want to get to a point where I say to you, Chris, because of this medical condition or that medical condition, because it will be a medical condition where I can't go fishing. I just came back from having a real fun 4-day trip catching salmon, halibut, and cod. I am not going to stop doing that or limit my ability to do that. I want to spend it while I can, and I will consider it a failure if I ever suffered a health condition and I can no longer do that, and I say to you, geez, Chris, I still got that $400,000 or million or whatever it is that I still have left. Because I will say to you, I blew it. I could have spent more. This is the only life I have. This isn't a game. I don't die and come back and do it all over again. My fun money, George, I do intend to spend. And we have many people who fall into that category. That's why Chris and I are passionate on it. But it doesn't mean your approach is wrong. It just works for you. Your approach is, I want to live off of my earnings. I can live comfortably. I don't have any regrets on it. And if I die, it's going to go to my kids, and I have no problem with that. Great. But not just me who doesn't have kids. There are people with kids who also have my approach, where they hire us to say, hey, what is my fund number? And then they have every intention of spending it while they can. And I don't want to talk too much about clients because a lot of them listen to this podcast. But there is a client recently whose go-go phase lasted 11 months. And then he was handed some very bad news. And I hope he can beat that news. But his go-go phase looks nothing like he thought it would. You don't know how long that go-go phase is going to last. That's why, Chris, what's your approach? You tell people what percent of your fund money, how do you talk to him about how you do that?
Right. So when we can figure out kind of your true bottom line net fund number is kind of maybe what I would call it. That's after we've had a long discussion about all the things you want to make sure to set money aside for and not put in your fund bucket, but we eventually get to the size of the fund bucket. And then I say, you know, so that you protect yourself from regrets, how much of that bucket do you want to deploy or commit to your go-go years? And the go-go phase for most people is going to be 10 to 15 years.
I usually sometimes say six.
Six to
it depends. We have some clients who retire.
Oh, yeah, later on. Life, right? Later on, sure. We have a lot that retire 60 to 65, though, in that range. At least
and
I've been saying
will be longer,
yeah,
yes.
There'll be longer. So it could be absolutely
six. We have
six to 15 years.
In their 50s.
Right. Yeah, six to 15 years. So obviously, someone on the shorter end of that doesn't need as much to have a great old time than someone with 15 years. But that's going to play a part in how much they're going to devote. If they have a really long go-go period, they're going to want to use probably a big part of that bucket to fund that. They've got a lot of time to have fun during those younger, healthier years. And then, and I encourage them almost, they usually can't answer me, honestly. They're like, boy, I have no idea. So, well, let's look at it reverse. In the no-go, how much of that bucket, when you're not really doing anything that's expensive, because most people above 85, and this is most, there's people climbing mountains above that, I know that, you have to admit, you know, but most people, the types of things they choose to do after 85 aren't particularly expensive and exotic. It's fairly basic fun stuff. So they might say, yeah, okay, that's reasonable. Let's say 15% of our bucket. we want to make sure is there for the 85-year-old to have some fun, to assume they're healthy enough to have some fun at that point. Okay. What about that middle period between 75 and 85? And other people will pick different ages, but those are typical. In the 75 to 85, what do you want to have there? Well, I think we'll be pretty active still. Our parents were active, or our parents weren't active, or, you know, they'll look at their family history and their own experiences and draw some conclusions and say, well, maybe 20%, 20 or 30% for that middle. So we've got, what, 45% in those last two phases? Well, there's what's left. 55% you can dedicate to your go-go phase. Other people, I've seen people that end up with as much as 75 or 80% they want to dedicate to go-go. Not meaning they're planning to have nothing later on, but they want to see what it looks like, what that spending would be. And the nice thing is, if you spend it too fast, because people are like, well, what if I run out? What if I... Well, you could actually earmark money for the slow go and no go, and then you can't, then you, assuming you only spend what you've dedicated to go go, maybe you run out, but you'll see how that's going. You can adapt. If you're blowing through it too fast and it's making you uncomfortable, you slow down. Nobody's saying the amount per year you commit to it at 60, you must adhere to that every year for the next 15 years without fail. No, every year you make adjustments, but it's the type of expenses you can adjust on the fly. And
our approach is
you have the financial and emotional permission to do so.
Exactly.
Because all you're playing with here is your fun money. If it happens to run out, all the other stuff we've already talked about has been handled separately from this. This is just the fun bucket.
Exactly. And what we try to do is rather than, and finally, Chris mentioned in the previous, on his first paragraph when we talked about the ability to have your financial knowledge and how it degrades. God, I forgot what I was going to mention there. God, see, now I'm going through dementia.
Yeah.
But, academic studies. Mm-hmm. You said the academics are finally catching up to us. And the academics are finally catching up to what Chris and I are starting to say. And that's true. When I go to seminars now, they're finally starting to talk that limiting someone to this steady amount on fund spending, you're going to spend $30,000 a year. That's your budget. That's your fund budget. Well, what about the clients of ours who are going on $75,000 round the world cruise? Two of them.
Oh, under that other plan, you can't do it.
No. Oh, gee, well, we're going to have to wait and do nothing for several years to save that money up. What Chris and I are saying is we want you to come with a fun budget. Everything else, George, is covered, and I think that's where you missed the boat. The guaranteed inheritance and all that other stuff that you want to do. But your fun budget, yeah, we feel whatever you earmarked for the go-go phase, because you don't know how long it's going to last, I'm going to acknowledge that and admit it. You say that, George. You don't know how long it's going to last. Neither do we. I always tell my listeners and my clients, slow go is an optional phase, and it's not your option. It's God's or nature's, depending on your belief. I say that all the time, exactly as I worded it. Slow go is optional. Because at any time, you're going to suffer a medical condition that will go from go-go to no-go overnight. I see it all the time. So what we simply believe in is helping clients decide. Let's just say the fun pool turns out to be $1 million. What Chris does is say, okay, with the example he gave, $550,000, that's your budget for the next X amount of years. Go enjoy it. The other $450,000 is for later. You might decide to take some of that later money and spend it sooner. Mm-hmm. Or some of that $550,000 is available later. But now, rather than trying to stress over how much every year I can spend, I don't give a damn. You want to go on that around-the-world cruise and go to British Columbia salmon fishing not once but twice? Go for it.
All in the same year?
Go for it. Yeah. $550,000 is your fun budget. That's how we do it. Right.
And it's your choice. And if you feel uncomfortable spending that much, that's fine. You don't have to do it. But you know you could because you know the size of your bucket now.
That's your budget.
And you can just watch it go down. If it goes down faster than you expect, then you dip out of it a little bit slower. But you realize, this is just for me to have fun with.
And again,
nothing else is at jeopardy if I drain this bucket too fast.
We got to wrap this up. But again, listener, it's not to say our approach is right or wrong and your approach is right or wrong. You can live a very comfortable lifestyle. You've obviously been blessed that you can live a comfortable lifestyle off of the interest and dividends your assets are generating. And you want to leave your capital to your children. But not everyone has that same desire, leave all the capital to children, or has enough capital where they can limit their fund spending to just what it earns. Mm-hmm. So not everyone is like you, just like not everyone is like my dad, who happens to live in a place where a lot of 80 and 90-year-olds share with him. They have money, but they can't spend it, and it bothers them because they missed out on a lot of things they could have done. You're surrounding yourself with people who don't have enough money and are complaining about that. But I can show you just as many people that are the opposite. We're all different. We all look different. We all act different. We all have different finances. So I don't think there's a right or wrong approach.
And I totally agree. So to wrap up this show, I just want to remind everybody that Jim and I are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in the Northern Colorado area that service people throughout the whole country. So if our retirement planning approach resonates with you, please reach out to us. You can do that by scheduling what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which is our free complimentary, I guess that's redundant, but our complimentary initial meeting where we can talk a little bit more about your specific situation and what you're trying to accomplish and what we might be able to do to help you make some of these decisions for your retirement. So you can reach out and schedule that appointment right on our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. There's a contact form on there and even a little calendar app where you can schedule directly. If you need a time that's not on that schedule, be best to call us because we do have opportunities outside of that calendar app. But there is a couple ways for you to schedule that. So thanks for everybody once again for listening to us. We really appreciate all of our podcast followers. And we do appreciate feedback, like you heard on this particular show. So everybody have a great week. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.